Yeah, so on the school bonds, 501, we're up $1,073,000, right? From $1,059,000 to $2,132,000. So we've had an increase of over $1 million in interest. So with all things being equal and no tax increase, where will we get that extra $1 million from?
Well, it's built into the budget. It's
what does that mean, it's built into the budget? It's got to come from somewhere, right? Has to come from the taxpayer somewhere.
And it's part of the comprehensive budget for the city.
Where specifically will that money come from? If we have a stable budget and we don't have any tax increases, and now we have an additional interest payment that we have to make.
Well, that's what the mayor's message talks about, what the revenue page talks about, what the expenditure page talks about. It's a collective package of expenditure increases and decreases, revenue increases and decreases, coming up with a balanced budget and the
Mr. Schaefer, that's really not an answer. That's really kind of semantics. What I'm saying to you is, if we have a stable budget, where is this money going to come from? Do you have specific line items in the budget that have been reduced, and you've taken those revenues and earmarked them to pay for this particular line item?
Absolutely not. We're looking at the total package and reviewing the budget with the mayor and his department directors. We're looking at the total budget. We're looking at total revenues.
So, for example, let me just tie this back into a previous question when I said, okay, so you're projecting $4 million in revenue from the sales of properties. That would also be included.
Absolutely part of it, yes.
So is it safe to say that your projections to pay for this extra million, a portion of that money comes from monies that have not actually been realized, that are speculative monies? We haven't realized them. Is that correct?
It's the total budget.
It's what?
The total budget package. You can't associate one, in most cases, you cannot associate one revenue item with one expense. Now, there's a uniqueness in this, and this is debt that was issued, approved by the voters for school bonds. That's
right, but that total revenue package that you're talking about,
yes,
embedded within that is some speculative revenue that we haven't realized yet that we're hoping to realize down the road. And what we're hoping to do is, with the monies that we're hoping to realize down the road, which are not realistic as of yet, is to pay for debts that actually are realistic as of this date. Is that a fair assumption?
I don't agree with your interpretation about speculative revenue estimates. I think these are conservative estimates across the board. I think that's a realistic estimate that you're talking about. Clearly, there are some places we're going to do better. There are always going to be places you do worse. That's just the way it works out in budgeting.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on debt interest? Councilman Sinapi.
Director, is it fair to say that there's always projected expenses and revenue in every budget, probably for the last 20-plus years? Director?
Go ahead, Director.
I didn't hear what he said.
The budget is a projection, correct?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Is it fair to say there's always projected revenue and projected expenses in the budget?
Project it in the budget?
Some items are not known at this time, but by mere fact that you're not able to see the future, right? It's a fair statement.
I am not able to see the future.
Okay, and that's the case for every year prior to this year, right?
That is fair for every year.
We make our best
estimates. Yeah.
Hopefully that resolves things for members of the public too. Thank you.
Okay.
Let the record show the treasurer cannot see into the future. She's on the record for that. Next up is the city collector's budget. City collector's budget, page 18. City collector's budget. Are we expecting another tax sale this year?
Yes, it's Friday.
This Friday is tax sale. Okay. Any questions from members of the council on the city collector's budget? Questions from the council on the city collector's budget? Questions from members of the public on the city collector's budget, page 18. Any questions from members of the public on city collector's budget? Okay. Hearing none. The next is the city assessor's budget. City assessor's budget. You guys are killing me here. Councilman Gephardt.
All right. So just one question. Sorry. I had it written down in a different area. So last year we had a big giant tax sale, right? And I'm assuming this year's is smaller.
Last year started off a lot larger than this year's. I mean, this is a 90-day process. It doesn't happen like in a week.
Yep.
And the numbers then were a lot higher. Notification to the public, notifications to the bank. So it did bring a lot more income in last year, but we've managed it and kept up with it and put those people on payment plans. So now this year it is a lot smaller, but the day of the tax sale usually is between 100 and 150 parcels of land that get subject to the lien sale.
Got it. Yeah. So my question was really just around 22323, which I am assuming is the cost of the administration of that tax sale.
Yes. So that would be all the fees for preparation, which we won't receive those invoices until after the tax sale.
Okay. I was just imagining that if this year's tax sale was less, you know, backed up than the previous one, that those administration costs may be less. But it looks like the expense line there is flat year over year.
Yeah, we usually expense about $125 as an estimate. Again, because you never know how big it's going to start out as. The sewer authority and the water department also have a piece in that as well that they fund from their line items.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Next up is the city assessors. City assessors is on page 19. Good evening, Director.
Good evening.
First question, can you talk to us about property revaluation, the budget, and how you came up with that number?
So we had decided internally to seek a delay in the revaluation that was effective for December 31st, 2021. What we're looking to do is add to the scope of that existing project and not go out to rebid. So this reflects the difference in continuing on and including the 2022 year, reanalyzing the sales and rebuilding the tables based on the changes in the market that take place. So the new effective date will be December 31st of 2022.
Okay, thank you. Any members of the City Council have any questions? Councilman Latta, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. So the change in the budget for salaries, that is the contractual increase?
Just in the salary item itself?
Yes, that's 23101, salaries municipal.
Yeah, we are looking to eliminate one clerical position, but also add a record specialist. We've had a long-standing problem with parcels that are what we consider abutters lots. Essentially, they were merged by ordinance, but they were never processed in our system or on our maps. So what we'd like to do, we have to pay every year for postage to send out tax bills. We have to pay every 3 years for reevaluation for these additional 3,000 parcels. So we can save money by cleaning this up, by addressing this long-term problem, and saving some money in the long run.
So you say you're eliminating one position and creating a new position. Is that the same person being eliminated and moving into a new position?
No, the clerical position was a retirement, and we've been able to, again, make some process improvements and feel confident that we don't need that position. But as a long-standing issue that we'd like to address, we do need the expertise to be able to assist with that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilman Ricks.
To get a general sense of how much this long-term issue is costing us every year, I imagine we're mostly talking about postage and a direct expense, but it's also, I imagine, costing the department time putting together all of those mailers or notices or the like. So approximately what would you say is the annual cost of this long-term issue that you're seeking to resolve?
Well, from an annual basis, it's the tax billing, the money we pay the vendor to prepare the actual bills, the postage. But more importantly, every revaluation statisticals were probably about $8 per parcel. So we got about $24,000 every 3 years. On the full revaluations, we're probably closer to $40 per parcel. So now we're getting up much higher. So, and these things aren't going away. They're recurring every 3 years. So it'll pay more than pay for itself. Plus, what happens is there's problems every time we have a tax sale, every time there's a foreclosure, because the parcels aren't well understood when the title exams are done. And we've got parcels that are sold at tax sale that shouldn't be. We've got parcels that aren't foreclosed on that create a standalone parcel in some cases. So it's much more than the money savings. It's just something that should have been cleaned up a long time ago, but nobody ever dealt with it.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you for taking the initiative to get that cleared up.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And just one quick note for the directors. When you come up, if you could just give the name for the people watching at home, the people here, so we know who's speaking. Thank you. Any other questions from members of the council on the city assessors? Okay. Any questions from members of the public on the city assessor's budget, page 19?
Philip DeCall, Ward 4. Should I direct my questions to you, Council President?
Yep, and then we'll have the ministers.
The reval is being put off to December of this year, am I correct? Is that what the director said?
Director?
Yes, we're still waiting for final approval from the General Assembly, but that's what we're proposing.
Well, why is that being done? Is that because it follows November 2022?
No, what we saw as we got into the project was that the market is not a stabilized market within the city. So the supply and demand is severely out of balance between the houses that are available and the demand for the housing that we have. Same thing on the commercial side, mostly related to the pandemic, where parts of the commercial market were negatively affected and parts of it actually benefited by the pandemic. So it's not representative of a typical market within the city, and we didn't feel it was prudent to implement something that we don't feel will be sustained over the next few years.
You're assuming that.
Well,
you don't have any data. You're assuming that.
No, I've been doing this for 30
years. But the real estate prices right now are sky high. They're still sky high.
It's
and
not,
the demand is still there.
It's not about the height of the market. It's about the stability of the market. So typically we have about 250 to 300 homes for sale in any given day. This year we're down to about 60 to 65 homes. So what we see is that people have no choice but to pay the prices that are being asked because the demand is high. Doesn't mean that it's going to continue post-COVID. Once COVID settles down, and we're starting to see the results of that already, we also have high gas prices. A lot of things changed in the global economy. Everything happened after December 31st, after we had done our studies. So it definitely would not be prudent. I've been doing this for 35 years. It's not a projection that I'm guessing at. It's my expert opinion.
So your expert opinion, and what percentage you think this is going to happen?
Well, like the treasurer, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't see the future. But
okay, But you're actually predicting the future. That's what you're doing.
No, no. What I'm saying is we want to see a market where supply and demand are in balance.
I know what you want to see, but you're predicting that prices are going to be down, real estate prices are going to be down in the year 20, at the end of this year,
no,
December.
Again, it's not about the hype, but we've already seen a drastic change in the interest rates, which has a major impact on the price that people can qualify for and the price that people will pay for housing. Same thing happens on the commercial market. There's a lot of things that benefited some of the segments of the commercial market because of COVID, the apartments being one of them. You can't get a vacant apartment unit in the city at a reasonable price. That drove those prices, and it's going to artificially make it look like those properties are worth more than they actually are once we get back to a stabilized year. So it's important not to look at the height, not to look at any shifts, but to look at whether that information that we had to base the numbers on for the assessments, was it based on stable conditions that are going to continue out for the next 3 years. Remember, we can only do these reevaluations every 3 years.
Yes.
We're already seeing the problems, and we haven't even got to the point where we send out a bill. It definitely would not be prudent to base it, based on what I've experienced over my 35-year career, to put these numbers in play for the city, that we'd have to hold the numbers until 2024.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, sir. Any other questions from members of the public on city assessors? Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. Neil, we had spoken about the costs of the revaluation, and I know I've been asked by several of my constituents, and as I recall, you had indicated to me that the monies that we have paid out to date for the evaluation performed would not be redone. We wouldn't be incurring any additional costs. That work would not be have to be duplicated. Whatever remaining work needs to be done would be charged at the same numbers as if it were happening today. Is that pretty accurate?
Well, it's a little bit different. Initially, the bid came in at $289,000. We worked with the vendor. We actually did a lot of the work in-house, so we reduced that number to about $253,000. So there's some savings there that we're going to attribute to the scope of work change we're going to have to do for 2022 market analysis, basically. We're probably going to be running maybe another $35,000 over that savings that we already had. But it's to further analyze the market on sales that haven't even happened yet. So we do have to pay the vendor for some of that work. But it will result in a better project and more defensible, more fair and equitable assessments.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up, because sure. I know some people were concerned that we would be incurring double the expenses, and that's not accurate.
No reason to redo most of the work. It's just to update it to the current.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is MIS, MGT Informational Systems. And Director, if you could just introduce yourself.
Bill Carlucci, MIS Director.
Thank you, Director. I told the director he had good news and bad news. Usually his department is last on the agenda. He's not last, but he still has to stay to the end. So I appreciate that. Director, how are your staffing levels? I know you just had a very important member of your team took a job outside the city. How are you staffing levels?
Currently, technically, I have 8 people that are available to me in my department, and actually 4 of us right now, but there is one position. There is one position that's been eliminated. It was what Director Schaefer had referred in the beginning. We actually had a position in case Zoom meetings became mandatory. We had someone to operate the Zoom meetings going forward, but since that's not come to fruition, we've eliminated that position for next year. And it's never been filled, obviously, to this year.
Thank you. Any questions for the MIS department from members of the council? Councilman Gephardt.
Hello, Director.
Hello.
Just a couple here. One is part question, part suggestion. under software. It's a relatively large line item. $675K-ish. So one question is that line item is up about $75,000 off of the 22 projection and about $175K off of the, it's about $50K up from the 22 budget. So can we just talk about what goes into that and what's attributed to the increase? And I think just generally a suggestion would be that if we can get some kind of supplement that allocates software across the departments that it services. A lot of times IT bears the burden of software that's critical for operating other departments, and we know that there is some allocation of that. So it would be helpful to see where that stuff hits. But to the question about the increase from 22 to 23 in software.
The increase is made up of a myriad of things. Number one would be a standard practice within the industry. The software maintenance charges tend to go up anywhere from 7-10%. We usually put, or at least the ones I've gotten involved in since I've been here, we put limitations on that, so they certainly don't, they're not open-ended. But that's going to be an increase every year. We try to offset that, certainly by reducing licenses, finding cheaper alternatives, doing whatever we can, but it's part of the makeup. Along with that, each year we have new and exciting pieces of software the departments bring to us and simply say, this is going to improve efficiencies. So as you referred to, we have departments that are actually experiencing reductions at the expense of our software budget going up. GIS is a very hot topic right now. It goes across many of the departments. That graphic system allows police safer operations in responding to a call, fire when they're doing the same, planning department, assessor's department, all of those things. But it's an expensive piece of technology. So that all feeds in. At the same time, we have departments that have reduced their usage of software, such as the police department this year has switched over to an existing piece of software. We just talked about this, I believe, at the last council meeting, and they've reduced their licenses, which saved us $10,000.
Thank you. That's helpful. Number two, miscellaneous capital expenditure, 25799. The 22 projection falls about 300K or 220K short of the, I'm sorry, the 2022 year to date is 1.1 million. The 22 projection is 890K. By that.
We had actually addressed two different network projects in the 2022 capital budget using the ARPA funds. With those was police and the city network. Because we're limited, and you know, it's a good problem to have. We have ARPA funds that are available to the city, and we have a limited time to take advantage of them, but we plan on doing the best we can to take advantage of every available penny. But I do have a limited staff, so we have to juggle projects. The $800,000 that was spent this year was for the police department. There is still more to be spent to finish that project next year, and we will now be addressing the city's network side of it in 2023.
Okay, great. And that's all part of the Sawtooth, the move to Sawtooth, and the broadband initiative we talked about last year.
Correct.
Okay, great. And then, so there's no real dramatic increase in spending in this department. And if anything, there's a sizable decrease. And I know you have some priorities around cybersecurity and modernization, including some funded by grants. So just talk about what those initiatives are and where those fall in the budget.
There's actually two pieces that we're leveraging for cybersecurity. One of them is a relationship we've built with the Department of Homeland Security that the mayor actually brought into the city. We met with them. They partner with CISA. There's a number of services that are available to us free of charge, and we're taking advantage of every single one of them. We had a penetration test earlier this year that was done by the Department of Homeland Security that saved us $24,000 minimum that would have been spent on a private firm. We were also very fortunate to partner with the Board of Canvassers Department and the Secretary of State and we were able to receive a cybersecurity grant for, I believe, $176,000 or something in that vicinity. That was the largest one awarded, to the best of my knowledge, within the state. So once again, we're leveraging, that's not in the budget because we're leveraging it off a grant, but we're trying to do everything we can to improve our posture. I just met with a security company today to look at the next steps that we can implement further controls, but we're using grant money and ARPA funds to be able to do that.
Got it. Thank you. No, we spent a lot of time talking about infrastructure in this room. And a lot of times it's the infrastructure. We see the roads and the water pipes and all things, but you can't neglect the IT infrastructure either, especially with all that's happening. So, all right. Thank you for that. I think I'm all set here.
Thank you.
Any questions? Councilman Ricks.
On that line item of 25,799 miscellaneous capital expenditures, there isn't anything projected here for the 2023 proposed budget. Is that something that has changed since the publication of this booklet, or
has it changed? It's actually been realigned. What I spoke earlier, one of the good problems we have is we actually have ARPA federal funding greater than manpower to do the projects we need to do. We're balancing that, obviously, with the time limits and how you go about applying for those funds. With that, we are earmarking ARPA funds. Does not have an impact directly on the city's tax base, obviously. But we hope to be able to balance what we can do ourselves and where those funds will also pay for the implementation services necessary to move us forward faster. At some point, we're probably going to have to leverage those simply to make the deadlines that the federal government has put in.
So for the purposes of the fiscal year 23 budget, there wouldn't be any intent to use general funds for miscellaneous capital expenditures. If there is anything later that would fit into that line item, it would be more of federal grants, ARPA funds, or other sources of funding?
That's absolutely true, with the caveat of there are regulations surrounding that, and I want to be very careful. I personally feel we have enough projects available to us that absolutely qualify under ARPA, that we'll be fine for the year without doing any other capital projects within the city budget on the non-ARPA side. But I can't think of any emergency that might rise with that.
Thank you. And I guess just to comment for me to be clear is that certainly if it's a wise expenditure and it's a situation where there may be some general funds that are needed in that particular line item, I'm not intending to, it's not my intent to have any sort of knee-jerk reaction against that. That's obviously something that your department, the administration, would be able to make that judgment call. So thank you for the presentation.
Correct.
Any other questions for members of the council on the MIS budget? Any questions for members of the public on the MGT informational systems budget? Page 20. Any members of the public? Okay. Hearing none, we're going to move on to purchasing. I do just want to give everybody I want to respect everybody's time, just give people a snapshot of what we're thinking going forward. So, what I'm proposing, and the council will take a vote, is that we do the purchasing, boards and commissions, and parks and rec. That'll take us to about 7 o'clock, which is about 3 hours in. I would like to pause at that time before schools. I know they have a presentation. I would like to take a 30-minute break at that time, and I want everyone to respect that, come back, and so we can respect time. It is a school night. Schools are here for that. So that's the snapshot that I'm going to propose. It's up to the council, but Next up is purchasing. Hey, Director.
Good evening. Pat Feshka from purchasing.
Thank you. Director, staffing, how are you for staff?
We are full staff presently.
You're full staffed. Okay. Any questions from members of the council on the purchasing division, which is page 21? Any questions from members of the council on the purchasing division? Any questions from members of the public on the purchasing division's budget? This is page 21. Any questions from members of the public on the purchasing division? Okay. Great job, Pat. Next up is the boards and commissions. That is page 22. Any questions from members of the council on the boards and commissions? Any questions? Councilman Ricks.
Are there any raises planned for any of the members of the boards and commissions that are paid?
Just for the public safety clerk.
What would be the amount of the increase for the Board of Public Safety?
275. She's, I believe, a union member, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
There's a clerk who, a secretary, I forget her title.
Okay.
So she works for the Board of Public Safety, and she would get the 275 like everybody else.
Okay. So not any appointed member of the board? Okay. I'll just a quick comment for the record. I think that for many of the boards and commissions where the paid members receive a small stipend, for many of those different boards, commissions, it's often been, I think, 15, 20 plus years since they've received any raise. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Sinapi.
This is just out of curiosity. Aren't at least some, if not all, those positions the stipend dictated by ordinance, or am I mistaken?
Ordinance or charter? They're all paid by ordinance or charter.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
Councilman Gephardt.
Just a brief clerical. I think maybe this is what Councilman Ricks was getting at, is the budget line item. If you look in the personnel supplement for the Board of Public Safety generalist from last year, was budgeted at $49,650, and at this year it's budgeted at $49,650. So again, not a meaningful amount, but that increase doesn't appear to be reflected.
Apologies, I forgot her, but she would qualify for 275 if this goes through. Yeah.
Any other questions from members of the council on boards and commissions? Any questions from members of the public on boards and commissions, page 22? Any questions from members of the public on boards and commissions? Okay. Next up is Parks and Recreation. Yeah, I'm going to find it.
I'm the Director of Parks and Recreation.
Good evening, Director. I'm just finding the page that your budget is on. Parks and Rec. Page 33. So the director reached out and asked to go this evening. So we appreciate reaching out early to let us know. So that's why this one is a little out of order. Director, how are you for staffing personnel?
We're at full staff. I will note on the what went through, there was a typographical error. Counter aids, there should be two, not one counter aid. So it would be two counter aids with a total of 71,724.
And that is Public Works. What page is that on?
It was on page 26 of the personnel supplement.
26 on the personnel. So that position is made up with two people, not one person getting
people,
the full salary
just
amount.
One person, two
same
people.
Salary
yes.
total, but it's two people yes. receiving that one. Okay. Which one was that again, Director?
Page 26 on the personnel supplement, counter aid should be two positions with the total allowance of 71,724.
Counter aid, okay. Director, can you speak to the beach passes coming up for the this year? Is that in this budget?
They went on sale today.
They went on sale today? Okay.
Yes, at the library. They went on sale today at the library and will be available throughout the summer anytime the library is the main library is open on Sandy Lane.
Okay, so beach passes are for sale today.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay, questions from members of the council on the parks and rec. Oh, and one more note. We see a big swing from previous years because a lot of the your department moved over back to DPW. At one point, some things came under parks and rec. Then they were previously in DPW. They're now back under DPW.
Yeah, the rink guards and the beach cleaners in the summer will come under DPW. Mainly because they're supervised by the DPW staff. So we move that salary, that part of the seasonal budget of with the rink guards and the beach fee cleaners to DPW. We were scheduling them, but then they were under the supervision of DPW, so it made more sense to just move that whole personnel line item over there.
The streamline. Okay. Councilwoman Travis.
Yes. Beverly, how are we doing with lifeguards?
We had two lifeguard classes. We ran two lifeguard classes this year, and we're able to get about 12 lifeguards that were interested in working. We've also, ironically enough, had some phone calls of people looking for lifeguard positions, and we're getting ready to run another lifeguard class in the next couple of weeks, and we already have three or four signed up for that. Our hope is that we will have enough lifeguards to be able to staff all three beaches, as well as keeping the pool the regular hours at the pool. As you know, last year we didn't open the pool till the middle of July, and we're only open limited hours through Labor Day, and then we only opened two of the beaches. We only able to open two of the beaches because of the lifeguard shortage. I believe this year that we will, my fingers crossed, that we will have enough lifeguards to staff all of the facilities all of the time.
That's great. And we're going to start on time this year. Last year, I know we were later.
Well, last year we were late with the parking passes. Yes. We were late when we charged. We opened the beaches on time. We were late charging for the parking passes because we ran out. We ordered 500 and we sold them in a day and a half. This year we ordered 4,000. We have 4,000 in hand, in house, ready to go with a printer now that can turn them around within a week's time. So when we start to get low, we can order more. So we have enough. We have enough passes to get going, and we will start the 18th of June will be when the beaches will open through Labor Day, and that's when we will start collecting the parking fees.
Thank you.
Mr. President, I'd just like to explain something. You're going to see listed here four harbor masters. And Councilman Lattice will help me explain this. Currently, the assistant harbor masters are on a board, and Councilman Lattice came to me and he thought we should have them as part-time employees for the reasons explained. He made sense. I fully supported it. It's an action that's going to go before the council soon because you have to change the ordinance. So I'll let the councilman speak to it.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mayor. So as the mayor said in the past, those assistants were through the Board of Public Safety. It was kind of like part-time appointments. They weren't actual employees of the city. At one point in time, they actually had to use their own boats, and that doesn't occur anymore either. These positions haven't seen raises in God only knows how long that they've been doing this, and it's not to say that it's here now, but what it will do is make these assistant harbor masters, actual employees of the city. I think that's pretty much what we had, Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions on the Parks and Rec? Councilman Gephardt.
Just briefly, hi, Director. How are you tonight? Nice to see you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
How are you tonight? Nice to see you.
I can't understand what you said.
Could you just explain what the counter aide position is responsible for?
Oh, the counter aides are at the pool. The counter aides work at the pool, collecting the day passes, selling the family passes, season passes, answering questions, being the liaison. If there's an issue within the pool, they would be called public safety, but they're the receptionists, if you will, at the pool. And they work, the pool is open from 5:30 in the morning until 9:30 at night. So there's one shift from 5:30 to 1:30 and one shift from 1:30 to 9:30.
Okay, great.
And then we have a part-time person that works the weekend shift of 7 to 3.
Thank you.
Councilman Lattiser.
Thank you. Director, I had asked this earlier in the revenue discussion, and it was suggested that I ask you. So can you explain to us why your projection on revenue for the McDermott pool fees is increasing from $105,000 to $150,000?
The fees for the pool, they're not only the memberships of people coming in to swim, but also for rentals. We rent the pool for swim meets, the YMCA, several of the YMCAs and aquatic clubs rent our pool for swim meets. And that's at a cost of, it's about $180 an hour that they rent the pool for meets, and the meets are 10 hours long on a weekend. So it's this summer, we usually haven't had meets in the summer. This summer we have 8 meets, and we had 12 additional meets throughout the course of the year. Also, the high schools, 3 of the high schools, Pilgrim and Tollgate, Bishop Hendricken, and East Greenwich all rent the pool for their swim teams and swim meets. And then we also rent out for birthday parties on the weekends, and that has been, it's exploded in the last couple of months. There's just about every weekend, at least one day on the weekend that we're offering a birthday party. And even it's $80, and usually we do that between 12 and 1, but we've also recently had folks that have wanted to do it for later in the day. So even though we close at 3 on the weekends, we've extended and stayed open till 5 to for birthday parties. So we've increased that's where a lot of the revenue has come from, the additional revenue.
It's all really good news. And it's most unfortunate that in a couple of prior years, part of it because of COVID, part of it is because the pool just wasn't where it needed to be. The city had lost a significant amount of revenue over a period of years. So I wanted you to explain that so the folks that are listening at home in this room as well realize the service, first of all, that the pool is providing to the community and the revenue that it's generating. And the same thing would apply to the Thayer Arena fees as well.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, with Thayer Arena, of course, we have the Warwick Figure Skaters that are longtime tenants there, as well as the Warwick Junior Hockey. But we also have had requests for hockey tournaments. Sarah DaCosta runs a huge hockey tournament in around Columbus Day weekend. We have a new group that's come in that's going to be renting the facility during the day for a prep hockey program for kids that have come out of high school that are between going to college or looking to be drafted in a hockey league. And so they're renting the facility like from 9 to 1 during the day. And then up from September through just before the high school season starts, they'll be doing some tournaments as well. And some of those tournaments will be during the day, so that'll be increased revenue. And we're renting the rink for anywhere between $180 and $210 an hour. And the other thing we've started, we have some stick and puck programs. The open skating has been very popular. So we're getting a lot of use out of the rink. Plus, the high schools, Bishop Hendricken rents for their hockey program, as well as Pilgrim and Tollgate, boys and girls at Pilgrim and Tollgate. And also the revenue at the pool has increased because a health club a local health club closed down that had a pool, so we're seeing the patrons from there, and the YMCAs have reduced their hours of their pool time. So we're really seeing large numbers of folks that are using, community folks that are using the pool as well.
And the overhead, the maintenance, the day-to-day expenses associated with the pool and the Thayer Arena, that those monies go through the Department of Public Works?
Yes.
Okay. Because, and I fully understand there's a significant amount of expenses, but I just think that it's worth mentioning that the two revenue items you just spoke about, just those two items there alone, almost equal your budget. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Any other council members have any questions on Parks and Rec? Any members of the public have questions on Parks and Rec?
Philip Durko, Ward 4. A member of the public, as a member of the public, dealing with Parks and Recreation and the DPW, the question I ask, first of all, are the responsibilities changes complete? So we know what the Department of Parks and Recreation is doing and what Department of Public Works is responsible to do. Is that being completed?
Yes.
Yes.
That was as of July 1, 2021.
Is that publicized anywhere in the public? I mean, how can we find out what the responsibilities are of Parks and Recreation now as opposed to what it was before and DPW? Is there a website that can go on that will tell us that?
The Parks and Recreation has a website. We're responsible for programming, permits, management, you know, the staffing of the pool and the rink, providing permits, league permits for picnics, ball games.
That's all on the website.
Beach fees.
Okay. And the second question is, does the budget reflect that? What was transferred to the Department of Public Works and what was remaining with Parks and Recreation? Because the cost of maintaining the equipment in the Parks and Recreation arena is very costly. And if that cost is being transferred to the Department of Public Works and not for Parks and Recreation, when maybe where it should be, it's skewed. The numbers are skewed, my opinion. Thank you.
I believe those fees were always in Department of Public Works.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members of the public on the Parks and Recreation budget? Okay, thank you.
Thank
All right. Thank you, Director. At this time, unless there's objection from members of the council, I'm going to request that recess for 30 minutes to 7:30. I do want to respect everyone's time that's here, so I ask that everybody be back in their seats at 7:30 to start. We will go right to schools. Is there any objections to going into recess now until 7:30? Hearing none, we're in recess. Welcome back, everyone. I invite the school committee and the school administration to come up to the desk. All right. Anybody else want to join? Come on. All right, welcome back, everyone. If you are following along at home on the agenda, we are now at the schools. So the school administration is going to give a brief presentation to the council, and then I will open it up to questions for members of the council and members of the public. So good evening, Superintendent. The floor is yours.
Good evening, Council President McAllister and the City Council members. I'm Judy Cobden. I'm the chair of the school committee, and I sit here on behalf of myself and my colleagues on the school committee and our administration to present to you the Warwick Public Schools FY23 budget. The superintendent and her staff have carefully crafted this budget with a thorough review of staffing, expenditures, and supplies necessary to run the district. This budget includes a 3.81% increase in local appropriations. This increase.
Oh, that one's better.
Yeah, just.
Okay. This budget includes a 3.81% increase in local appropriations. This increase is due to a decrease in state aid, as well as increases in contractual obligations outside tuition and rising costs of goods and services. The budget request has been thoroughly reviewed by the school committee to ensure that the district has the adequate funds to provide quality academic, athletic, and artistic opportunities for our students. At this time, I would like to have the Superintendent Lindy Ambrook speak.
Good evening, City Council President McAllister and City Council members and members of the community. I come before you tonight with a budget request of approximately $135 million. We realize that one of our responsibilities is to be fiscally accountable. In order to accomplish this, the directors of all the departments work collaboratively during many meetings to prioritize expenditures and to make the necessary cuts. We have utilized the Elementary and Secondary Emergency Relief Fund, as well as title funds, to support our budget. These items funded by ESSER and title funds are not included in the requested city appropriation. During this budget process, we made sure we were responsive to the needs of students, and we focused on teaching and learning. This budget supports our vision of a graduate and also our district strategic plan. At this time, I would like to turn the meeting over, or the presentation over, to Tim McGrath, our finance director.
Good evening, members of the City Council. Tonight, I'm here to present the school committee's approved FY23 budget. I'll jump right into the slides that you have. You have this in your packet. Here you'll see a breakdown of revenue from 2019 forward with an FY22 year-end estimate, as well as the FY23 school committee approved budget. You will see that over the years, much of the revenue has remained consistent. Jumping to the next slide, a few differences in revenue impacting FY23 are a slight reduction in state aid, along with a reduction in tuition revenue of $500,000. This is due to we're not seeing the same number of students attending the CTC programs as we did in the past, so I felt the need to adjust the revenue to meet the trends that we're seeing. Next up, we'll look at a summary of expenses. The next slide has, here's a summary of expenses broken down by UCOA's major object codes for the school committee's approved FY23 budget. The next slide breaks this down graphically. I think it's a good representation of the district's budget. This pie chart uses UCOA major object codes. You'll notice the two biggest pieces of the pie are personnel service compensation and the employee benefit codes. This equates to approximately 80% of the entire school department budget. In preparation of this budget, we have found the two largest pieces of the pie to contain a handful of significant increases, which we had little or no control of. The next slide outlines those different increases. Here we have the four largest impacts, two largest pieces of the pie, the 80% of our budget. We need to include the following items: contractual salary increases for FY23 of $3 million, healthcare increases of $500,000, the trust recommended 2.7, but we're utilizing our fund balance in the trust to reduce our expense. The state pension increase of $1.8 million, along with a WISE pension increase of $900,000. But note, the school committee reduced the ask that was initially proposed. This is a total of $6.2 million. So the next slide, I'll jump back to the pie chart. Of the remaining 20% of the budget is divided up into six other pieces of the pie: other purchase services, purchase service, purchase property service, supplies and materials, capital equipment, and debt service. The largest of those six pieces of the pie, other purchase services, which is 70% of the remaining 20, or 14% of the remaining budget. The next slide outlines what's in that $25 million. It's made up of $12 million for transportation and $12 million of added district, for a total of $24 million of that 25. The next slide breaks down this even further, describing our total expenses, $178 million. Of the $178 million, $142 million of it is related directly to employees. That leaves the district with $35 million. Of that 35, which I described, $24 million is related to transportation and tuition. That leaves the district with $11 million. Of that 11, utilities, insurance, audit, repairs, and maintenance equate to $6 million, leaving the district $4.5 million to run the remaining of the district. Of that 4.5, it's broken into operational materials, operational services, and then student materials and student services to kind of lump them together for $4.5 million. The next slide describes the process that we went through to get here. What we're presenting is a process over 5 months where budget directors came together, presented all the requests. This chart shows where the process started of the initial ask of $196 million. The superintendent and the rest of us worked to cut $11 million. We then put $5.4 million into ESSER III and other grants for a total of $17 million taken out of the ask. The superintendent recommended budget was $179 million. When I went to school committee, they cut additional $932, leaving us with the $178 million ask tonight. This last slide, describes the FY23 budget versus the FY22 budget, showing the increases in the various object codes. So what does this all mean on the last slide? The additional city ask is $4.9 million. So in conclusion, which is the last slide, expenses were reviewed to reduce the FY23 budget to the lowest possible levels. I adjusted revenues to match trends, and we also, through the process, worked to understand the needs of the district along with the visions of the directors. And lastly, we utilized one-time federal funds for non-recurring expenses when possible. And that's it for my presentation.
Thank you very much, Director. First, I just want to thank the members of the school committee who are here this evening. I think it is really great that they came here, sitting at the table in front of the council, in front of the residents. This is a budget that they have voted on and sent here. So I do want to acknowledge that they are here, and I appreciate them coming here along with the administration. Are there any questions from members of the council on the school budget? Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good evening. I have a question for anyone on the dais. So, how much of this budget, or how much of your allocated budget, would you say is, and I ask this every year, unfunded mandates? That is regulations sent down by the federal government that requires, let's say, a teacher-to-student ratio, meaning special education services, possible Title IX. I know we get reimbursement for certain items. State regulated and federal and state Department of Education regulated. About approximately what percentage would you say?
I don't know if I could put a percentage on it, as much as we cut as much of the items that were not required as we possibly could. So to put a number on how much would be unfunded, I think Lisa wants to.
So we do have some curriculum mandates that weren't funded by Rhode Island Department of Education. So Director Dr. Schultz will specify.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me this evening. So I'm the curriculum director, and I just wanted to go over a couple of the unfunded mandates that have come down from the Department of Education. One of them is the mandate to have something that's called green curriculum. It's something that we have to have in grades K through 12, every level, and it has to be for both ELA or English and also for mathematics. And so over the past few years, we've been mandated to purchase materials. One of the big ones this year, thank goodness it was absorbed into ESSER funding that we had for grants, but it was $1 million just for the elementary level for next year for our new ELA program. So that's one huge one. Right there is $1 million just for the materials. It's the best of the best. It's what our students need to help propel Warwick into the top 10 out of all the school districts, which is our goal. We're gonna get there. And so some of these mandates, they're here for a good reason, but they are very, very costly. Same thing with the high school. It was $700,000 to purchase new materials this year alone for English. So right there is 1.7. I could keep going. I'm going to have to look at my notes, though, before I continue speaking. So I hope that answers part of your question.
That was actually two great answers. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
That is a big part, just on two items. The follow-up I would have with that is, no, maybe not the follow-up, but so when a student, let's say, does not get the required, do you go on a credit curriculum? So like, students collect credits, they need to have credits by the end of the 4 years. So technically no one stays back. It goes from 9th to 10th grade. So even if they pass one class, let's say it's worth 0.5 credits, they go into the 10th grade with 0.5 credits. Now they're expected to get the additional 4 credits from the second year, as well as a 3.5 credits from the previous year, correct? Is that how the school system is set up?
Yes.
Thank you. So when students move on to the next grade and they carry over, they are obviously required to do some sort of credit recovery or some sort of summer school. Is there a cost on the student to do that?
No, we can't charge students for summer learning.
Is that also a mandate from state or federal?
Yes.
So basically, we're investing the money to teach these children. We are giving them over 50% of our budget, $178 million to educate them, and they can choose, and the family can choose not to follow through and have these students pass. And we therefore have to pay another cost to give them the ramp up and the credit recovery they need. That would also be considered, in my eyes, and I'm not, I follow up to what you said, a very costly unfunded mandate. Is that a federal or a state requirement?
It's state. We've had commissioner decisions in the past that said that we're required to pay those costs.
Thank you. Second, another question, is there active truancy court? And what I mean by active truancy court, are parents brought in truancy court?
Yes, every Thursday we have a truancy officer who is an employee of the school department. And every Thursday he works on children who are truant and they do go to court.
So let's say students are attending school every day but failing everything and the parents are not returning calls or the guardians are not returning calls, and whether they come in late consistently, whether they are coming unprepared, do they get called to the truancy court or do they see any court advisor at that time?
It really depends on the age of the student.
Okay. So the age of the student, as you said, correct? I'm sorry,
Yes.
Thank you. So the age of the student, would they focus mostly on elementary, middle, or high school?
elementary, middle, and some high school, yes.
And some high school. Thank you. However, we are rated and our funding depends on the high school students that we have coming to the school. And the high school students, if they end up dropping out, that counts against the data and the rating of the system, as well as the rating of the educators. But yet, the high school students are left out of the equation of the costs of putting them in the building, feeding them, giving them the services, and yet not completing the curriculum. We bear that cost. I wanted to just ask those questions. I thank you so much, because as we look at this, I know it's easy to get lost in the numbers. It's easy to get to see the cost of the salaries. It's easy to see the challenges. And I do appreciate the challenges that your department and that school committee has done or face. I apologize in the work you have done. But there's a lot more to be said when you are dealing with this budget. We are dealing with a mandated heavy, and I'm not going to debate whether it should be or not, but we are spending sometimes, in my eyes, twice the amount. If we have students who are consistently showing up to school, not doing what they are required to do, and then we kind of cut corners, not this school committee, not this school department. It is cut corners because we have to put the resources where we can use them. And I would agree with sending the students in elementary and middle school to the court and kind of get them early. But by the time they get up to high school, the battle is still going on. So we can look at just these numbers. But as you heard the testimony today, there's a lot more that has to be looked at that is not included in these numbers. And the costs that we bear and that we have that is not funded but yet mandated by the federal and state government. Thank you very much.